That's Jerry Mulligan and Johnny Hodges with Bunny. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Monday, December the 31st, the last day of the last month of the year 2012. And as we speak, no news out of Washington. But you're used to that, no news out of Washington. The Do-Nothing Congress continues in its fine tradition of doing nothing yet about a budget. Well, this is how President Obama described the dysfunction in Washington. He appeared on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday with David Gregory. Here's what he had to say.
When you talk about a dysfunction in Washington, you signed this legislation setting up the fiscal cliff 17 months ago. How accountable are you for the fact that Washington can't get anything done and that we are at this deadline again?
Well, I have to tell you, David, if you look at my track record over the last 2 years, I cut spending by over $1 trillion in 2011. I campaigned on the promise of being willing to reduce the deficit in a serious way, in a balanced approach of spending cuts and tax increases on the wealthy while keeping middle-class taxes low. I put forward a very specific proposal to do that. I negotiated with Speaker Boehner in good faith and moved more than halfway in order to achieve a grand bargain. I offered over $1 trillion in additional spending cuts so that we would have $2 of spending cuts for every $1 of increased revenue. I think anybody objectively who's looked at this would say that, you know, we have put forward not only a sensible deal, but one that has the support of the majority of the American people, including close to half of Republicans.
But when they say leadership falls on you, Mr. President, you don't have a role here in breaking this impasse. You've had a tough go with Congress.
David, you know, at a certain point, if folks can't say yes to good offers, then I also have an obligation to the American people to make sure that the entire burden of deficit reduction doesn't fall on, you know, seniors who are relying on Medicare. I also have an obligation to make sure that families who rely on Medicaid to take care of a disabled child aren't carrying this burden entirely. I also have an obligation to middle-class families to make sure that they're not paying higher taxes when millionaires and billionaires are not having to pay higher taxes. There is a basic fairness that is at stake in this whole thing that the American people understand, and they listened to an entire year's debate about it. They made a clear decision about the approach they prefer, which is a balanced, responsible package. They rejected the notion that the economy grows best from the top down. They believe that the economy grows best from the middle class out. And at a certain point, you know, it is very important for Republicans in Congress to be willing to say, we understand we're not going to get 100%. We are willing to compromise in a serious way in order to solve problems as opposed to be worrying about the next election.
You said that Republicans have a hard time saying yes, particularly to you.
Yeah.
What is it about you, Mr. President, that you think is so hard to say yes to?
You know, that's something you're probably going to have to ask them because, you know, and David, you follow this stuff pretty carefully. The offers that I've made to them have been so fair that a lot of Democrats get mad at me. I mean, I offered to make some significant changes to our entitlement programs in order to reduce the deficit. I offered not only over a trillion dollars in spending cuts over the next 10 years, but these changes would result in even more savings in the next 10 years and would solve our deficit problem for a decade. They say that their biggest priority is making sure that we deal with the deficit in a serious way, but the way they're behaving is that their only priority is making sure that tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans are protected. That seems to be their only overriding, unifying theme. And at some point, I think what's going to be important is that they listen to the American people. Now, you know, I think that over the next 48 hours, my hope is that people recognize that regardless of partisan differences, our top priority has to be to make sure that taxes on middle-class families do not go up. That would hurt our economy badly. We can get that done. Democrats and Republicans both say they don't want taxes to go up on middle-class families. That's something we all agree on. If we can get that done, that takes a big bite out of the fiscal cliff. It avoids the worst outcomes. And we're then going to have some tough negotiations in terms of how we continue to reduce the deficit, grow the economy, create jobs.
Well, there you go. President Obama talking yesterday on Meet the Press with David Gregory. The president sounds perfectly reasonable, perfectly sincere, perfectly eager to get, as he says, get the American people's business done. But, you know, we take a closer look and we find that all parties involved here are playing games. Well, let me just address the news conference itself. Now, the president doesn't talk to the nation. All this time that he should have been explaining, giving us a play-by-play, what's going on with behind closed doors. What's going on play-by-play with the negotiations? We don't get that. He chooses the moment and he chooses the network. And oddly enough, in the same way that he, President Obama, is representing all the guys in the room, the five or six or how many guys it is in the room when they sit down to talk, we don't know because we don't know who's invited. In the same way that the president represents this group, he chooses NBC to represent the press. So the press was NBC, and NBC had the privilege of being invited to the White House to basically take advantage of this exclusive one-on-one interview with the president. So you're not, as an invited guest, you're not likely to get cantankerous. You're not likely to ask questions aggressively. You still are minding your manners because you realize that of all the other networks, he chose you, NBC. Hip, hip, hooray for that. So David Gregory gets to be the press. And the American people, as the phrase is always used, the American people had to tune in to NBC to find out really what's going on. And we still don't know what's going on. This is an interesting thing. A budget is being articulated and there's a lot of dealing going on, but nobody knows what's going on. And in this very democratic country, because we so staunchly believe in democracy, not even our representatives, our lowly representatives, are in the room. They're told to just shut up and just get yourselves lost until we call you, and then, you know, we'll call you for the vote up and down, yay or nay, and then we would have had a budget. We would have done our duty to the American people. You know, this is a fascinating thing. These are the kinds of charges that you would say we are accustomed to hearing them leveled at dictatorships and autocratic states, where you do as you're told. Our notion of a participatory democracy is being shattered before our eyes, and nobody cares. It really doesn't matter. The people, the American people, and President Obama just referred. I mean, this is what they want. We didn't know what we wanted because we didn't know what was being discussed. He's telling us, this is what you wanted. You wanted this, 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 and this, and this. I don't remember that being on the ballot. Nobody understands what this package consists of. Nobody knows the gory details of the budget. But the president just blithely, he asserts it as if it were a fact. This is what the American people want. This is why I'm here. This is why I was reelected. This is why the Democrats are in. The people want the middle class out and up and up and down and and none of it. If you ask the average American voter, what was it? Did you remember voting for an economic package of any sort? Do you remember what the constituent parts are to that package? Did you vote for middle out economic theory to be applied here? Did you remember voting for these things? This is what they do. And 17 months, you heard him confirm it, 17 months. You put something out there that this is of top priority. The nation doesn't know what exactly you're talking about. At all, for 17 months, you just didn't explain what the component parts are and what the options are and what the likely consequences will be. We got a snippet when you and your buddy, Mr. Romney, were debating with each other, a glancing reference. But the gory details of this plan, we don't know. And I continue to ask the question, what is the economic theory that is being applied here in the formulation of a budget? All we hear are things like, well, we've got to raise taxes and cut spending. This is a very complex world, ladies and gentlemen. That is not at the national level. That is not supposed to be the operative economic theory. That is a super simplistic and politically guided economic analysis. Politics is determining the moves that this administration is making. And it is, I keep harping this point, if you don't believe me, go back and see. This is following chapter and verse of the Clinton years. Exactly. The Clinton years, exactly the same programs are getting priorities and exactly the same focus. Cut spending and raise taxes. It was Clinton who introduced these lovely ideas to us of ending welfare as we know it. And you notice at no time in that clip did the president use the P word? P as in poor. He has a kind of automatic blockage that occurs. It just shuts down the brain. It does not allow him to use the word poor. It does not allow him to use the word poverty. He stops at the middle class, and that's as far as he's going. This is not a reformer. Nothing on the table is about reforming a system. The tax system needs overhauling, not tweaking, but he is a tweaker. He is there to tweak. And he's taking great pains to tell people that what he's after, and you have to read between the lines there, what he's after is to make the rich pay more taxes. And that's supposed to give us some kind of a psychic, a psychological benefit. We feel good. Yeah, he's going to stick it to the rich. That makes me feel great about being in the misery that I'm in. The issue is not about whether the rich should pay more taxes. The issue is the tax structure needs to be overhauled. And it's not going to be overhauled by tweaking. And the reason they keep telling us that the Democrats are focusing on making the rich pay a higher percentage of tax is that when they screw the poor people of this country, the working people of this country, we will feel better to know that, well, we're paying a heck of a lot more, but look, they're making the rich pay even more. So comparatively speaking, we're okay. That's the setup. You are going to get screwed, but you would feel a little bit better. It's a consolation prize. You will feel better because the rich are being taxed at a higher rate. As if we don't know the truth. The rich are called rich because they are able to hire entire law firms to help them shelter their wealth. You can tax the rich, how about, have we not seen it? You want to tax the rich? Fine. They take their companies offshore. They take their wealth offshore. They have 400 lawyers they could call up and hire an entire firm that specializes in studying the tax loopholes, and which, of course, this current trend in negotiation is not even worrying about the loopholes yet. They just want to, they have spent 17 months just worrying about one or two things. Again, bear in mind, this president who was elected on the crest of all this hope for reform, and it was reform linked to justice. The reforms that were sought were reforms that people wanted to get a sense of balance and justice. It's not about screwing the other guy so I feel really good. It's about an equitable system that works, that makes sense, that is predicated on sound economic theory. Saying that we are looking to raise taxes and cut spending is just plain stupid. And it is insulting to the intelligence of anybody out here with two working brain cells. Because we know economics in this day and age is far more complex than that. The same message that Alan Greenspan delivered to Clinton all those years ago is the same message the Fed is dictating to Barack Obama today. Your job, your entire 8 years will be spent paying off the deficits run up by the Republicans before you. Bill Clinton paid off the debt run up by Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. And he went so steep in this formula, this silly formula of cut spending and raise taxes, but deeply cut spending. That's why our great liberal president went with a razor and ended welfare as we know it, and ended a whole bunch of programs that should have been a benefit to the working poor and the poor in this country. And if you want to throw in the middle class, throw them in too. Because Clinton's administration was not friendly to the working class. But all his years in office, that was the mandate. And it made no economic sense whatsoever. Sure, you had a surplus because he did a very diligent job. He put the razor to the jugular of most working Americans and got the requisite quarts of blood. But did the economy grow? No. Here we are. We are in crisis as a nation, not because of the deficit. It is because the economy is not working. They have tolerated this administration and its economic advisors for political reasons, have informed this administration's economic theory that what you do, where you can allow unbridled deficits, you could tolerate unbridled deficits in the financial circles. Sure, bail out this one, bail out that one, bail out the next one, bail out the banks. Now, that kind of deficit, they don't worry about. The same banks that are now committing crimes, laundering drug money, acting like banksters, the banking version of gangsters, they financed all of that. So that kind of deficit spending, they're willing to tolerate. The deficit spending attributable to all the pork barrel projects that are buried in all of those clauses and omnibus bills and all these other hidden places, you notice neither Obama nor Boehner is raising that question. You know there are several billions of dollars worth of pork barrel stuff in there. But they essentially are of the same mind. We're not going to touch those things. We are going to be responsible. He used the word responsible. We're going to be responsible and fair, he said. We're going to be fair. And nowhere is there a discussion of the number one priority, because he is, of course, a man guided by the will of the American people. Well, the will of the American people, as I remember it, is jobs. Jobs. The will of the American people is jobs. Nothing on the table, nothing being discussed, nothing so far is touching the will of the American people for jobs. And any credible economist would tell you that in a situation like this, because it has happened before, I played you the tapes before, we listened to the minds of some of the leading economists of the world. There are acceptable levels of deficit spending. And what is acceptable is to get the American economy moving, and moving not on Wall Street, but you invigorate the economy by investing in projects that generate employment. It's not even remotely in the air. And this, I remind you, is not year number one for Barack Obama. This is year number five. So he has fallen down on the job and he has failed so far. He's entering his fifth year of not doing the one thing, which is the number one priority that Americans said 4 years ago, which is jobs. They could say whatever they want about cutting the deficit and whatever it is, and we got to raise the taxes. Well, yeah, let's see how we compare what you say to what you do. We talked about the tax code. Is it being overhauled? No, that is not what he's there for. He is not there to overhaul anything. He's not there to radically alter anything. His approach is the gradualist approach. His approach is the ideology, if you want to call it that, of the Democratic Leadership Council, that wing of the Democratic Party that is to the center or center right. Stay in the middle lane. Now, if you have to dart over to the left or make it look like you're darting over the left, you do that. But you are essentially a centrist and a conservative. Now, people are thinking, and they're mistaking this president as a liberal or as a progressive, and he's not. He talks like it, but he's not acting like it. And he hasn't been acting like that for 4 years. The unemployment rate in the African-American community, intolerable as an 8% or 7.7% unemployment rate now is to the nation, it is more than twice that in the African-American community. And it's the African-American community that gave him 90-plus, almost 96% support. No other community performed like that. This is year number 5. He's not talking about poor people. He's not talking about the working poor. He's not talking about the working class. He stops at the middle. That's as far as he's going to go. He has one big mission to achieve, and I repeat, that health care bill, which is a gift to the insurance companies because it requires, unconstitutionally, I would argue, it requires that everybody purchase insurance from financial institutions. And simply because you buy it doesn't mean you can afford to use it. But they don't care. That whole package essentially came out of the Heritage Foundation and further embellished, again, unconstitutionally and illegally by Hillary Rodham Clinton. And now it is Barack Obama's charge for the Democratic Leadership Council to get that program into the end zone. That's what we're seeing. So don't be fooled with any of this stuff, all the fiscal cliff, the fiscal. We've been over the cliff. we flew over the cliff a long time ago. What we need to appreciate here is that we're all being given this kind of a blue smoke and mirrors. And it is coming from the guy who said, trust me to stand up for your rights. Trust me to do the right thing. Trust me to be just and fair. Sure. Sure. Sure we could trust him for that. Well, you know how embarrassing it is. I'll read you just the first couple of lines of this news item from Reuters. It says, China academics warn of violent revolution if no political reform. Could you believe that? This is China, where people are afraid to engage the government. And they are saying, we have had it. We are not going to tolerate this craziness that's going on here in China, where everybody is super law-abiding and very, very timid to confront and engage the government. Here's the story. A prominent group of Chinese academics has warned in a bold open letter that the country risks, quote, violent revolution, unquote, if the government does not respond to public pressure and allow long-stalled political reforms. This is China. The 73 scholars, including well-known current and retired legal experts at top universities, as well as lawyers, said political reform had not matched the quick pace of economic expansion. Quote, if reforms to the system urgently needed by Chinese society keep being frustrated and stagnate without progress, then official corruption and dissatisfaction in society will boil up to a crisis point and China will once again miss the opportunity for peaceful reform and slip into the turbulence and chaos of violent revolution, they wrote. Now, this is a bewildering thing. But this is an expression of a people conscious of the fact that the government is not greater than they. They are at least as equal as, if not greater than, the government. And the government, if it's not doing what the citizens want, then there will be a violent reaction. And this is from scholars. Look at what has gone on here in the United States. The great superpower, the land of democracy. For 3 years, no budget. For 17 months, no movement. And now we're talking about, well, we're going to go over the cliff and, well, this is what's going to happen and taxes will go up. But hey, you shouldn't feel too bad if you're poor and you're working stiff because, you know, the multi-billionaires are getting taxed at a high rate too. So it's a democratic suffering. You know, I tell you, this is the way that people break. This kind of game that's going on, this kind of legislative terrorism, as I have discussed it to be, is almost tantamount to treason. The conduct of these elected officials who said, the hell with you. We don't have to listen to you. We don't have to account to you. You voted? Great. Now get lost. We'll tell you how it works out. And by the way, by executive order, the federal employees, including Joe Biden himself, now have a little bit more cash because Barack Obama did what? Oh, yeah, he approved that. Politics, I tell you. We'll be back right after this little break. Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lee. You can always send me a note and continue the conversation at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. So what would you say were the stories or events or issues that had the greatest impact on you in the year 2012? I came in late on the year, but what would you say would be the issues or events that had great impact on you this year and why? The number is 888-874-4888. I'd love to know how things impacted on you and changed you one way or the other. Did you learn more about something or did something hit you profoundly and opened your eyes about the world in which you live? It'd be fascinating to know. So yes, just keep these things in mind as we hear about the fiscal cliff and all this other kinds of nonsense. Just focus on the real deal here and less so on all the other things that are designed to pull your attention away from what is central and what essential is. In the middle of all of this, people are being ignored. The will of the people, the will of the American people, as they like to say, the will of the American people is being ignored. And we being set up for something completely different, and I know it's going to hurt. It surely will hurt. Because so much energy is being given to divert our attention, and we should immediately suspect that. So we are hearing that Hillary Rodham Clinton is at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital being treated for a blood clot. And, you know, I may be cynical, but don't believe everything you hear. Supposedly, this is as a result of a concussion she suffered when she allegedly fainted at home of dehydration and hit her head someplace. They didn't say where the clot was. So when you see these kinds of amorphous kinds of unspecific information coming out, you know there's something else happening there. So we'll just we'll find out what the truth is at some point. We'll find out what the truth is, because they said that she is being treated with anticoagulant medication, which is unusual for a concussion of that type. So we'll know what it is. 1-888-874-4888. Okay. Now, coming next year, there are certain things that I'd like to talk about, but maybe I should talk about that in the new year. I will talk about that in the new year. Certain things that we can do to improve our communities and to get ourselves a little bit more involved to the extent that you want to be involved. But it's a good idea to adopt some kind of a cause or some kind of a project and move with it. And I really do appreciate the fact that people have so many constraints on their time and all of that. But there are certain things that you can do. It may be as simple as, you know, helping a kid learn how to read, or, you know, planting flowers on the block. In fact, there's one block in Brooklyn on State Street that is considered the most beautiful block in Brooklyn. And it's just started just like that. People just planting flowers on the block. It's really spectacular when they're all in bloom. And by virtue of that little project, the entire neighborhood took on a whole different attitude and became a real neighborhood again. It was uncomfortably close. People thought to, the criminal element at one point. There was a lot of drug use and prostitution and whatnot in the adjacent blocks. But the people who were on that block decided that that's not how they're going to live. And they started to tell their story with this little project. We will beautify our neighborhood. We will not allow it to be ugly. We will not allow it to succumb to the ugliness around it. And because they started this effort, and because it spoke of community involvement, well, wouldn't you know, the community planning board got a little bit more courage. The local precinct visited or would patrol the area a bit more frequently. And they made it very hard for the criminal element or the antisocial element to destroy the neighborhood, where they had a lot of kids and so forth. And with that project, the entire block, it goes on for about a couple of blocks now, is just absolutely gorgeous. It encouraged homeowners now to take better care of their homes. It encouraged stability because people weren't packing up and leaving. And it gave new life and new meaning simply by planting flowers. And these are the things that we can do well within our means to become involved at one level or the other. In the coming years, and certainly in this next 4 years under the Barack administration, and we already are seeing the signs of a very high turnover in the cabinet, which is something typical because people tend to leave, but it is not typical this many people leaving. So there's something going on there, whether it is that these folks came in, you know, very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, thinking that they were going to do, some really good radical work, radical meaning, getting to the root of things. And it didn't turn out that way. Maybe disillusioned, I don't know. Maybe they saw a contrast to the leadership they thought that they would be functioning under, and it turned out not to be so. Maybe they just underestimated the pressures of the jobs that they had and just didn't see that they wanted to, at their ages, at their respective ages, and with, in their view, much more usefulness and utility in their lives still ahead, that they wanted to go through another cycle of that. And maybe that's just why they're leaving. But it's always the case that in second administrations, people who have a chance to merchandise their experience try to do so early. And if it looked good that Barack Obama was going to be in for a second term, and if the second term was going to be pretty much the same as the first term, in which he got absolutely no cooperation from the Republicans, and they stymied there was nothing going on in Congress for 3 years. That's 75% of his administration. Just the idea of a repeat of that is enough to get people discouraged who are in the at the apex, in some cases, of their career. So they prefer to leave on a high note. But whatever their reasons, the fact is that a second-term president, of late, you get a sense that it wasn't so in say the 50s or 60s or even the 70s, but of late, presidents are highly cognizant of the monetary value of their expertise and experience while in office, and they seek to capitalize on it. So much of what they do in their second terms has to do with posterity, and that is basically paying attention to the question of how will history remember me and what for? So they build their history, they build their brand, their profile. You see, Clinton just recently had Martin Scorsese basically agreeing to do a biopic, which is great, a great nod. But others, of course, build libraries that hold their works and so forth, like the Reagan Library and the Ford Library and the Carter Library and the Clinton Library. Is in the works. And so they are occupied with that. How will I be remembered? How will history treat me? And they also are very aware that if they're young enough, they have a stretch of productive life ahead. And so they make the next 4 years of the administration not too bold, not too crazy. They don't want to, you know, stir any hornet's nests. So they tread lightly, which is what Barack Obama would more than likely do.
Good afternoon.
And, you know, they take it easy. They don't go too far left or too far right. They try to stay right in the middle and not muck things up for them. I think we have a phone call. I'm not so sure. I'll know in a minute. So that's what's on their minds. So look for that in this president as well. He's going to not do anything extraordinarily radical. No overhauling, no substitution of one way of doing business for another. He is not going to take on a big, long, protracted fight in Congress. He just wants to get out on a high note, and he will want to be remembered as an extraordinary president who entered the scene at an extraordinary time, accomplished extraordinary feats, and basically wherever he happens to end up is going to be riding on that brand for a long time. So as we come to the end of this year, I want to wish you all the best for the new year, which we will spend together, I hope. And just take care of yourselves and give yourselves some room to relax at least tomorrow. Thank you so much. We'll see each other on Wednesday. Bye-bye.